my, what could else be said? It's so beautiful. Yet, because of the Iowa Sisterhood, I stand here and have to talk to you. And it's such an honor and always such a gift. For a little girl who was too shy to speak in front of her class, to be here today with you to speak. Now I love imagining myself as brave and as pioneering as Mary and Eleanor truly were. They were passionate about our faith and took risks to be who they needed to be. Once upon a time, I actually helped to start a new congregation myself, and I have to say it felt amazing. Stories of such new starts, creating something out of nothing, are empowering, and they're naturally attractive. They spark all kinds of growth and possibility. But the fact is also that there's a troubling, untold layer that came before the women of the Iowa Sisterhood led a movement of a pioneering faith. Always, there is another story before that story, and another one before that, and more still which we may never ever know. Those quote-unquote frontier lands being settled by white Europeans were home to others before them. A map of Iowa in 1798, 100 years before Mary and Eleanor were ordained, shows several Native American tribes making their homes there, including the Pawnee, the Iowa, the Dakota, and Omaha. And they were descendants of others who lived there for thousands of years before. The fact is, erasing others' stories is a well-known tactic of white supremacy and patriarchy. On that frontier, homes and people were threatened and cultures nearly destroyed by the dominating Euro-white culture that colonized those native communities. White supremacy robbed them of their homes, their languages, their cultures, and surely silenced their voices. Unfortunately, the pioneering spirit we like to celebrate meant death and terrible loss to those who were so displaced. That story is less likely to be told, but it is true and it is ours. It is the reason we focus on Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day this month. It has literally taken hundreds of years to see the story behind that story. People calling themselves Unitarians may have not been on the scene for those genocidal events, but our predecessors were there, the Pilgrims and Puritans, who arrived here seeking freedom to practice their faith. They were there. Sometimes they made friends with Native people, but more often they claimed their land as their own, and worse, labeled the Native American as savage and unworthy of human dignity and community. Treaty after treaty was broken in the name of the pioneering spirit and that manifest destiny of whiteness. However we look at it, alongside our seeking of freedom, tolerance, and love, there is in our Unitarian Universalist DNA some of the culture of white supremacy. We may or may not have created it intentionally, but it is a system we cannot help be a part of, because it's the foundational history of a country we live in. Its evil practices and silent denials of life live on in us too. So what is a little Unitarian Universalist church in Lincroft, New Jersey, or any town USA to do about it? I think the answers are in our sense of home and comfort, and in the practice of what it means to be a good guest. The answers are in our appreciation of both comfort and challenge. As I'm sure you are aware, the challenges facing us are frightening and real. Our world is more divided day by day. Just as our world and our country and our hometowns desperately need moral guidance and models of ethical living, a place to find the ethical path through the tangle of misinformation, Many mainstream faith communities are in decline. This month, there's the anniversary of the Tree of Life synagogue shootings. All too often, another mass shooting reminds us that our safety and freedom to worship as we wish is not secured so long as supremacy systems give permission to destroy others' homes and lives again. People who might pray differently do not deserve to be silenced or denigrated, and certainly not shot at for it. This violent hatred and intolerance of other cultures is antithetical to the values we express. And yet it is on the rise at home and abroad. For me, one key reason to keep on trying to be the church, the congregation, is a belief in multiculturalism, that a pluralistic faith like ours has a chance to heal the long and deep divisions among us. My colleague, Reverend Rob Janice Dillon, says, "I still believe in multiculturalism. I still believe we will learn to live together amidst our differences, and in fact, we are already learning. I know multiculturalism won't win through violence. There will continue to be attacks against Muslims, against African Americans, against Jews, against Christians, against foreigners. In other words, against multiculturalism, against minorities, against the other in a myriad of different contexts around this small world. But he has this faith that we will, stumbling and bleeding, learn how to live together. All the evidence indicates that in our lives and in our societies, in so many different ways, we actually already are." So this being different and being together is at the heart of this Unitarian Universalist experiment, creating communities that hold us in our grief and joy, and that challenge us in our ever-present ignorance, is our only hope for creating peace-filled lives for all who share this planet. There is no guarantee that we will be successful, but I would rather die trying than give in to the fear and hatred that substitutes for real community. Whether it's we or our neighbors or even our enemies do not deserve fear and terror in our days. There is another path. It's the path of embracing pluralism, embracing an ever-expanding exploration of our diversities. That is the source of our strength. The challenge of pluralism is to see and address bravely the willful ignorance of our part in supremacy systems. Multiculturalism has the power to disrupt our comfort in the privilege of not knowing how others feel and experience this world. It's a very good thing to be knocked off the pedestal of our arrogance and our assumptions that we are always good and right. I'd rather be down on a level and messy playing field where we can experience a totally different kind of community, a community of comrades, equals, and friends who are in the struggle together. No winning or losing, just living and loving as best we can one day at a time. So what does a faith community that challenges white supremacy culture look and act like in this 2019? Whose voices are amplified? Who is talking and who is listening? What kind of bravery and courage is needed now? When I think back to 1997 and the start of that new congregation in Somerville that I was a part of, we all thought we knew what we were doing, and we were willing to take some risks. The bottom line was that the energy and commitment of everyone involved exceeded the challenges we faced. There was a spirit of anything is possible that held us in its grip. It was the upside of being pioneers, for sure. That spirit of adventure and promise was there one Sunday morning when a challenge to our welcome occurred in a very public and vulnerable way. During the morning's announcements before the service began, a newcomer stood up and took issue with a story that had been told in the service the previous week. I recollected being Daddy's Roommate, a book about two gay men living together. The visitor had three young children, and he did not think speaking about LGBTQ lives was appropriate for them. It was one of those moments when you can feel the oxygen leave the room. I remember thinking as I stood up to give that week's story, I was not a minister yet, so I was thinking, what would a minister do now? So I did the best I could. I invited the visitor and all who were interested into a conversation about the issue following the service. When I left the service after the children's story, the RE chair and I huddled together to figure out what that conversation would be like. I know I was not alone in describing our values and why we felt it was critical to teach our children that love is love. But that was not the whole story. The sense of safety that LGBTQ folks had felt within that congregation was disrupted just by that question being uttered in their sanctuary. The work of centering their experiences and voices, the healing work of reestablishing trust, takes time and probably is still happening there. It never ends. A bubble of innocence had burst. The harsh realities of an intolerant world had entered our newly established sacred space. And so the real work of being a faith community began. That's the work of understanding and forgiveness, the work of toughening up and opening up even when life is less than perfect. Ultimately, that experience of being challenged served to strengthen a core value, not weaken it. A commitment to embracing all families was made more explicit by that challenge. Articulating why all families are welcome here was a skill that needed to be drawn out and down from abstraction to concrete commitment and action. Talking with folks who are challenging us in a way they might be able to hear requires some skill, some meeting of them where they are at. It takes confidence along with compassion. These are the skills. A little church, a little congregation at peace with itself and open to growing equips its members with to meet a challenging world. Our purpose is to comfort those who need comforting, the oppressed, the dispossessed, and those hurting from the storms of life. It's actually not to make even more comfortable those who are privileged and secure. It's not our job to encourage white fragility, that sense that any challenge to white heteronormative culture will break us. Church should be a level playing field where all these assumptions, our vulnerabilities, and our strength come together to mix it up, shake us up, and then see what happens. Annie Dillard nails it when she says this: why do people in church seem like cheerful, brainless tourists on a package tour of the absolute? Not here. Does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children playing on the floor with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill a Sunday morning. It is madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense. Or the waking God may draw us to where we can never return. This trying to be good, or finding the God or grace in these crazy, intense, and unsettled times, does seem to require some extra safety equipment. Today it requires a fire drill. But you know, we can no longer assume that an hour of worship on Sunday morning is enough to save us from our very human tendency to destroy what is good. If Unitarian Universalism is going to change the world, we have to meet the struggle every single day of the week. We need to be creating sanctuaries, not just in beautiful buildings like this, but on street corners and shopping malls and schools and homes and prisons. The challenge for this liberal multicultural faith is to go out and meet the world on its own turf, to bring love and hope and great lively music, dance, faith development, and all the beauty and truth we find in here, bring them all out there where the real challenges lie. We are tasked with being the church rather than just going to church on Sundays when there's nothing more interesting going on. The terror that has been unleashed on and within these shores since 9/11 is demanding more of us. Love, our love, as imperfect as it might be, has to show up. When we are tired and challenged by hatred again and again, that is what this faith calls us to do and be in an age when the old ways are crumbling all around us. As carriers of that love, we have to be willing to be humble and even wrong, to get messy in our efforts to unravel the clinched fist of white supremacy that has this world in its unyielding grip. We must be willing to hear the story behind the story, to listen more and carry peace into the hurt and troubled places. To be Unitarian Universalist in 2019 means to be at home in our skins and at the same time to be exquisitely good guests. Guests of a world that is different, sometimes welcoming and sometimes violently not. Now you might say, why not be good hosts instead? And here is my definition of being a good guest. A good guest is grateful and appreciative of what is offered. They know that a guest may feel awkward and uncomfortable at times in the presence of different cultures and customs, yet they try to adapt themselves to the circumstances. They do not demand that the host change who they are. A good guest eats the food that is served and leaves the place as they found it, not imposing their will upon others. These practices of receiving hospitality graciously can undermine the hegemony of our comfort and expectations. Because, you know, it's actually a power position to be the host all of the time. Being a guest empowers others to lead and to host, and name their own terms that hopefully will not fit the same white supremacy script we are so comforted by. Unitarian Universalists need to stop only thinking of ourselves as hosts with the power to be generous with our welcome, and instead more inclined to empower others to take that lead. As in any interfaith engagement, we will learn more about our own strengths and our own core commitments and beliefs by placing ourselves in the more vulnerable role of stranger and guest. If Unitarian Universalism is to live into its promise, we all have to be willing to risk our comfort for the challenge of real diversity. We must prepare ourselves to meet others who are beautiful and different, and to be their gracious guests in the home of the world as it is today. Now more than ever, I pray that we can be the congregation, be the church, be the synagogue, be the mosque, the temple, the gurdwara, be the meeting house of hope wherever we go. May we bring with us a willingness to engage in face-to-face human hospitality, a human warmth and touch that is genuine and healing. And in this simple yet profound willingness to go out of our own comfort zones, may we boldly create a safe and holy space for all whom we meet on this road. May this be our new and pioneering faith for this day. Amen.
Now please remain seated as we sing together